Werther Grange was a conference centre and retreat centre on the edge of the city of Sheffield in South Yorkshire, run in association with the Anglican Diocese of Sheffield. It's now a spirituality centre for day events with an award-winning dark garden, ideal for quiet days. I mention this because it was there in summer 1977 that I attended the selection conference that led to my recommendation for training for full-time ordained ministry in the Church of England. I was 21 years old. It's obvious to say that the world has changed a lot since 1977. So has the Church of England. So I want to highlight a few facts, first of all, by way of comparison between 1977 and 2023, to remind ourselves of some changes that we may not always have in the forefront of our thoughts. Take the world's population, for example. It has almost doubled since 1977, when it was about 4 billion. It is over 8 billion now. The number of private cars was less than 300 million back then. It is now over 1 billion. That's not counting the trucks either. More than three times larger. In short, there is so much more now. More people and more machines, more buildings, more roads, etc., than there were in 1977, by factors of double or triple. It might surprise you to remember, or to hear, that the top personal tax rate on earned income in the UK in 1977 was 83%, and the basic rate was 35%. These are now 45% and 20%. Even in the USA at that time, the top rate was 70%. I will return to the significance of this fact in case you are wondering what relevance it has. When it comes to the environment, we are acutely aware that in the last 45 years, this growth of human activity has had a major impact on the Earth. In 1977, there were 334 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Today, there are 416. This is why, in 2020, the average surface temperature of the Earth was 1 Celsius degree higher than the average of the years between 1950 and 1980. The world has warmed up significantly since 1977 and continues to do so. Then there are the animals. There are now fewer large mammals in the world, not counting domestic ones, all the cattle, sheep, goats, and so on, than there are people in the West Midlands metropolitan area. On the other hand, there have been many improvements in the quality of life for millions of people across the world. Here is a summary from the Bennett Institute at Cambridge University, looking across the whole of the growth of the world since 1900, in fact. The 20th century saw unprecedented gains in global welfare. From 1900 to 2015, life expectancy more than doubled, from 30 years to 70. Literacy rates more than tripled, from 21% to 86%. And the proportion of people living in extreme poverty fell from 67% to 9%. But alongside these indisputable improvements in the human condition, the global economic system had also generated 1.5 trillion tons of CO2 emissions. It is now clear business as usual will cause climate catastrophe, with the potential to wipe out that century of progress. That's the Bennett Institute in the University of Cambridge. Then there are the changes in the Church of England. That, by contrast, has not been a story of more, but rather of less. Church attendance in the Church of England nationally has halved between 1980 and 2015. The figure will be lower now following the pandemic. The number of full-time ordained ministers in post has declined. I didn't have access to the actual figures, but this will give you an indication. In 1977, less than one quarter of parishes were amalgamated with another under one vicar. Now, almost three quarters of parishes share their vicar with another parish. Far fewer people are being baptised and confirmed as members of the church today than in 1977. Whilst I was going through all my files and getting them all sorted out ahead of the arrival of the shredding machine, I found a piece of paper with the names of all the young people who had been confirmed when I was a curate in Yorkshire in 1983. And it was a foolscap piece of paper, and half of it was full of boys' names and half of it was full of girls' names. That was just one year's confirmation service. But in the church, there's also an interesting story of more, not less. Churches are doing more to help people in their communities than at any time since 1945. More than 33,000 social action projects are run or supported by Church of England churches. That means 80% of congregations are involved in one or more forms of social action. And that feels like a huge change since 1977, when it seemed social action by churches was confined to the inner areas of large cities. Now there are food banks, credit unions, pantries, support hubs of all kinds in every town being run by church or church-based collaborations. Here I return to my earlier statistic about tax rates. Back in 1977, there were problems with our economy, yet most people, I think, certainly I was, unaware of the rising influence among politicians and business leaders of a completely different vision for society than my generation had grown up with after the catastrophe of the two world wars and the Great Depression. This new vision involved a radical cutting of the Gordian knot of our tangled social contract, a switch which began tentatively at first, but accelerated through my 45-year period, irrespective of party colour, towards minimal government and the handing over of much of our common shared wealth to private hands and market forces. Council houses are just one example. You may be wondering by now, when do I get to the spiritual and moral focus of this as a sermon? Well, maybe I just already have. If here in our country, and it is true in the USA and many European countries too, we have seen a loss of faith in the Christian vision of life, it seems alongside that there has been a loss of faith in our capacity to govern and organise ourselves to ensure there is equity and justice in the way wealth and resources and opportunities are shared across the country. Some people would say there is an attitude and an ethos of self-interestedness, even selfishness, that has been allowed to grow, to the detriment of those people in our society who do not have the connections, the inheritance, or the access to education that others have. As the words I quoted from the Bennett Institute highlight, for all the amazing progress humanity has made, including in the last 45 years, to improve the lives of so many, we see now there are costs to be carried and dealt with. The climate, the wider environment, water, air, soil, decent housing for all, growing poverty and indebtedness, social instability and inequality, mental health, obesity, addiction. And the question is, who suffers these costs? Because not everyone does equally. And who bears the cost of mitigating and remedying the impact? Because not everyone appears to be ready to do so. We have forgotten we are not simply consumers or investors. We are also citizens who share a common inheritance and a common dwelling place ultimately the one earth, of course. And as Christ's teaching advocates, we do have the capacity to choose to be neighbours who care for one another, indeed to be children of God, and therefore to choose to see one another as brothers and sisters in ways which go beyond our particular in-group. Our gospel reading today I chose because it is for me one of the Bible's purple passages, a kind of signature passage for a life of Christian practice and the kind of community a Christ-focused vision of life could inspire. Sitting at the table at the Last Supper, Christ's disciples began arguing about who was the greatest among them in his new community. Jesus challenged them not simply to model themselves on what they saw in the wider world. This was to be a new way of being community. In the world as they had experienced it until then, it was wealth that won influence. The rich and the powerful may have been generous and may have wanted to appear so, but it came at a price. They expected to determine what was decided about the way their society was organized, rather than serving the people. Their gifts were given in order to oblige the people to serve them and their vision. This model was rejected by Christ's vision for community. He upended this understanding of power and service. In the kingdom of God, the greatest is the one who serves others. The one who is ruler should be like the one who serves. The disciples didn't understand that Jesus might be so unsuccessful that he'd end up crucified. What they were talking about, who is the greatest, showed them still to be in the grip of this mindset of using wealth to have power and influence in order to have control over others and shape the world to serve our own needs, irrespective of the needs of others and the demands of justice. The teaching and the actions of Jesus undermine the notion of life's goal as a striving to get power for ourselves over others. His teaching and his life reverse the polarity. Greatness and power must be used to serve the freedom and flourishing of others, not to ensure they serve you or some ideology of your choosing. In the crucifixion, we see God in a different light. Here, Jesus follows through on his teaching and gave up his power to dominate. He was faithful and vulnerable and a powerful Christ. And then he rose again. And the resurrection of Christ, we believe, was God's affirmation of the truth and the power of the way of service. Removing Christ by execution was not able to eradicate the enduring truth and power of his vision for human life. He was risen in his followers, and by it, they were risen into a new way of being and living, and a new community of people was formed to share that vision with the world. So the past 45 years have seen a race for ever-increasing wealth and power in the leading societies of the world, giving inadequate heed to the detrimental impact on the planet, the natural world, and on the quality of relations in human society. As a result, we are at risk of leaving many stumbling blocks for the children of tomorrow. Financial instability, social and personal confusion, environmental depletion. Without action to stop and reverse many current trends, we are at risk of passing on a planet that is more divided, less sustainable, and more dangerous. We are all prone to see what we expect to see, and that has consequences in two ways. We fail to see just how much damage has been done and is being done to the earth and our communal and personal lives by carrying on with our accepted ways of living. And at the same time, we also fail to see the opportunities there are to make changes and to move to a better pathway into the future, in our own lives and in the wider world. That's where hope and faith are so important. We might ask how we witness to the authenticity and power of Christ's vision of service in a world and a generation which is suspicious, and perhaps rightly so, of all attempts to define their reality for them to sell them another ideology alongside all the others. Of all attempts to suck them into an organization too much like all the other organizations which have used them for its own ends. Perhaps the answer is far simpler than we expect. Not because it's straightforward like an off-the-shelf fix, but simple in the elegant sense. We witness to the truth of the vision of Christ by becoming more like Christ. That is, bringing to life in our own lives God's gift of service, Christ-like service. It's important to shape service in the model of Christ. We all know the distorted shape of so-called service, which is really about getting you to fit into another's agenda. Christ-like service authentically seeks to serve rather than to be served. It really is about helping another. It is the essence of what giving is all about. You could say that the gift of service is the gift of giving itself, because genuine help and assistance offered to others seeks no payback. The Apostle Paul's words sum up the Christ-like example that he had tried to model in his farewell speech to the church leaders of Ephesus. Remember the words of the Lord that he said, "It is a blissful thing to give rather than to receive."